thing I think is very significant is the bring your own device. It is coming, it is happening, it is supporting the first two attribute of cloud computing, which is self-servicing. You use your own device, you can self-serve and access the application or source you want. And the second thing is ubiquitous access. So if you want, we want to fulfill that, which is a two essential attribute of cloud computing. The bring your own device is essential. And for Microsoft, there's a number of announcements in this area. For instance, now in Windows Azure, Microsoft Azure, we can deploy Windows 7 and Windows 8 client. At this time, it's purely for MSDN subscription, which means it's still in a test environment, but you can see the technology is there. Second thing is in Windows 8, we have a Windows to go, which allow you to basically deploy your corporate desktop in a USB drive, and there's a many different mechanisms you can put in, and there's a policy, and the encryption, the device encryption, and so on. The third one I see is a service model that we must embrace in enterprise IT. The service model, just to make it real simple, is you just ask what you need, and the IT is going to provide that, as opposed to go through a lengthy process to acquire what you need, because we found out the business unit, and the survey supports that many business units now bypassing IT and then going to third-party vendor to get their business done. So we see that the service model, which enable IT to really provide instant gratification to your user, you need computing power, you need network, you need storage power, you just ask. So in enterprise level, Microsoft is really embracing something we call Windows Azure Pack, which is going to bring the Windows Azure experience in a private cloud in an enterprise environment. And I see these three things are very exciting opportunity, and there's a big challenge as well. One, again, is the security, it's always there. Second thing is to bring your own device, and the third one is the service model that IT must embrace.
Thank you. Brett, tell us a little bit about Rackspace.
Yeah, thanks for having me out today. Many of you may not know too much about Rackspace. We are not heavily in the government sector. We host some citizen-facing websites such as marines.com. We started off about 15 years ago. We're in the web infrastructure and cloud computing space. You may have heard of us more through an open source project we started a few years back called OpenStack, which is spreading across the government and healthcare sectors, both pretty widely, as both of your sectors are looking at private cloud options in a number of cases. So the way I think about cloud computing in general is, and the things preventing adoption just is to take a step back even further. Infrastructure as a service clouds are basically a new way to procure servers and data center. It changes the procurement process and it simplifies it in a number of ways. Because today when you buy a server, generally you want it plugged into a TCP/IP network and you want to be able to have an operating system on it already. You don't want to necessarily have to talk to someone that sells a server, get the server shipped to you in a box, pull it out of the box, put an operating system on it, put it back in a box, ship it to your data center, plug it into the data center, give it an IP address, and all of those steps there in that business process essentially slow things down, their waste. The AWS folks talked about it this morning. It's that agility, it's that speed of getting the asset from the purchase time to where you can deploy and use it, and then also being able to release that asset if you need. So infrastructure as a service itself is just a new way to procure data center space and server hardware, essentially. As you move up to a software as a service level, it's a new way to procure software. And if you go through the software distribution models, if I'm a software company, initially I had this cost of distribution where I would put stuff on a floppy disk, I would print manuals, I'd put it in a box, and I'd ship it to you. And that was my cost of distribution and packaging. And then we move forward to where you put it on a CD, but you still put it in a box and you shipped it to your customer. Then we move forward to where folks were doing digital download, where that cost of packaging and distribution now was a PDF manual and a way you can download their software off of the internet. Software as a service is just packaging and distribution for software in the cloud era. So as you're looking at making these moves and thinking about it, this is maybe some of the ways I've tried to simplify and explain this can help you explain this to some of your colleagues that are not as cloud savvy. Because when people get afraid of new technology or new things, it's because they're not able to map it back to something they're familiar with. And last closing point, as you're moving into cloud computing and any sort of technology shift, the agility and speed sometimes ask you to sacrifice quality. And I think you should be very careful about where you make those sacrifices and trade-offs. There are certain applications inside your business where quality is paramount. If it's critical for all of your employees doing their job every day, and this is something that's going to be a massive productivity loss for, if you have an issue with it, or if things are not as simple as they were for your staff currently, think about that very carefully. Ones where it makes a big sense to move is an example, again, like AWS showed it took 60 hours to do some data processing before and now it takes 2 hours. Those type of elastic use cases and workloads where you wouldn't buy 1,000 servers before, those type of things make sense to utilize in a cloud. Or if you have a distributed collaboration, distributed teams, and users with multiple devices, multiple device access, those are kind of places where you want to get your data into the cloud so that data doesn't end up lost on somebody's USB stick or laptop.
Thank you. Mark, introduce Juniper Networks for us, please.
All right, so I'm Mark Belk with Juniper Networks, and so I don't actually supply a cloud. I support cloud, but I support other infrastructure and other usages as well. So Juniper supplies routers, switches, security appliances that enable cloud, but we also enable the enterprise. We enable service provider. We enable cloud providers and other functions as well. So it was a great analogy. There was actually two used today. So the first one, Amazon, at their last slide had the cloud, but it had a road that went to it. Well, Juniper is part of the road. We give you infrastructure. The other one was plumbing, water, the utility. So water flows to a utility pipe, IP, the internet protocol, flows through a pipe. And so we want to supply that. We do supply that. We want to expand that. We want to be able to give you expandable, agile services on top of that. And it's not just about the compute function. One of the biggest concerns you have is going to be security. And security has been a rigid construct at the edge, in the process, in the architecture for some time. And we want to break that sheet metal down. We want to turn that into services on demand, services which are scalable, both vertical as well as horizontal. So we have been supporting open standards like the ETSI, which is network function virtualization. Network function virtualization allows me to streamline certain services that you need in front of your cloud compute load or your enterprise compute load and allow you orchestratable services, in other words, manageable services for you. So coming back to where are some of the challenges to get to the cloud. So I taken a couple of notes from earlier, but security and trust, and I don't call them the same thing, but security and trust is, of course, a high bar for that. Security meaning, how do I stop someone from taking advantage of my or improperly using my data? And then how do I trust, one, what I'm using, which would be my device? How does an organization or how does the cloud trust me? And then how do I trust the application stack that I no longer have in my positive control? And so there's things we need to do there to give both sides a level of trust, a level of validation that meets regulatory but also personal requirements for me to actually leverage governance. Governance in that sometimes relates to policy and other, but if I have systems today, I've got to move them somewhere. I've got to transition my IT usage scenario, and I need the same access controls. I need similar ability to validate who should have access to something, how they get access to it, where is that access controlled? So those type of things. How do I run policy? How do I handle when something changes? So governance is a big issue. Transition. I heard a lot this morning about new applications and how you would be transformative. Well, in the government and healthcare, we have existing applications and existing data. How does that move over? Do I have to refactor? Refactoring is a big issue. And then acquisition. And I think we all know that we're going to have transformative acquisition to really enable this.
Thank you. Welcome. Marlon, a little bit about SAP.
Thanks. I'm delighted to be here today. I'm Marlon Zelkowitz. I'm a director in the Global Public Sector Organization, and I focus on both cloud and mobile. All of you have probably heard that SAP, or maybe you haven't heard, SAP is not just an ERP company anymore. SAP is becoming the cloud company. Our executives, our CEO, Bill McDermott, has been saying this in many different venues, and I'm sure you'll hear a lot more about it in the next month at our event for Sapphire. But what does that mean? Well, we have the SAP Cloud powered by HANA, which is both for lines of business as well as for industries. And I would like to just take a moment to talk about what are the obstacles that I see from where I sit as a global person based in Washington, D.C., in terms of government cloud adoption in particular. So what I see, security, as we've heard, security, privacy, but I'm going to add one more really important point to that. Thank you, Edward Snowden, data sovereignty. We find that our customers are insisting in many countries, especially countries that were formerly Eastern Bloc, but not just that, also it could be the Netherlands, that the data must remain in country. There are laws, for example, in the Netherlands which require any personal data of a citizen, which would be around human resources line of business, has to remain in the Netherlands. So how are we going to get that kind of great scale and economy from cloud solutions if we have to have a data center in every country? So I'd see that that's a big issue. Then, of course, the privacy and security concerns that we've heard the other speakers address, and I won't belabor those points. I think they've done a great job of that. We also, I'll just say that also there are different security standards in different countries, and there isn't just one standard. FedRAMP has done a great job pulling together one nice comprehensive baseline. But what happens as cloud companies and also as customers continue to innovate on those platforms and make changes? How do they recertify? How do they stay in standard? I don't know that we have an answer to that question today because this standard is too new. So stay tuned. I think it'll be exciting to come back here in the years to come and talk about this with this audience. Next area, we heard someone mention earlier this morning, organizational change and change. Change isn't just the IT organization using cloud solutions. Change is also for the acquisition organization, as Mark was talking about. How do we have contracting standards? How do we procure cloud? What are the conditions and terms we need to have in our contracts? What's the best way to buy it? How do we make sure we have a possibility to change cloud providers? Who owns the data? What do I need to do to get that back? All of that is really causing some hesitancy in the procurement community as well as the information technology community. Meanwhile, the business is out there consuming a lot of cloud today. And I think you saw early leading edge in the research and tech and medical research areas and other research areas like NASA, but also increasingly in the intelligence community that wants access to vast amounts of information that they can't keep all themselves and continue to maintain on-premise. Then finally, I just would like to talk about some open items that I think will be defined over time, but right now they are causing some what we think are barriers to adoption. I would say things like the exit strategy, as I mentioned, also interoperability. How do you use different clouds together? Which things are you using together? What are your standards for encryption and for not just your data at rest, which our colleague from Microsoft mentioned, but also your data in motion? We have a mobile-first strategy, and we recognize that you have to also encrypt the data while it's in flight. You need to protect the application and not just the database. And so we're cognizant of that, but I think it's early in those days, and I think that will continue to evolve. So with that, I'll say thank you and turn it to the next speaker.
Thanks, Marlon. Okay. Tom, welcome from Canon.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning, and thank you for the invitation and allowing us to be here. I'm with Canon USA Incorporated. We're more than just the camera company. Actually, the biggest bulk of our business is in the imaging and document management area, the copiers, MFPs, printers, et cetera. We provide those type of solutions that are hardware solutions, software, and services to our customers to really help them handle their document management. And of course, what that means is it's all going to a cloud-based delivery type system. We continue to use the physical delivery of much of our items. We also are using the e-download capability as well. But as the services and the solutions mature and this technology becomes much more available, we're definitely leveraging the cloud. We really do see the cloud as being a method to be able to deliver what we need to our customers much more efficiently, provide them with all the benefits that's been talked about here, offloading cost, reducing cost, and that from an IT standpoint. It also is going to be able to provide some additional innovation that we can provide to our customers as well, which from a competitive standpoint, that's very important. I think the biggest challenges that we see has really been addressed already. One is the security issue, the security, the privacy issue. When we start dealing with handling our customers' documents, that means the information that contains that's contained in that document has to be protected. And so when it gets out into the cloud, out into the pipe, we've got to make sure that it's protected, not only in transit, but then, you know, when it finally comes to rest, where it's going to be stored and utilized. That's key. But the second thing is that in order to allow customers to utilize the technology, you want to make it as easy and pretty much as transparent as possible for the user. So you can't really, you know, put too much stuff in place like a Fort Knox type of scheme to where the user themselves can't utilize that technology. So I think there's a dichotomy there. There's a balance that has to be met. And that I think, from our standpoint, that's really what the two major challenges that we're seeing right now.
Welcome. James, last word.
Sure. I'm James Clippinger from MarkLogic. We are a company that makes an enterprise NoSQL database that runs both in cloud and non-cloud environments. We're based out of Silicon Valley. We have a major public sector presence, and I'm from our public sector group in Tyson's Corner. And in some sense, we see the future with the cloud because one of the markets that we're most active in outside of public sector is media and publishing. And in the last 10 years, the media and publishing industry has gone through really seismic change where publishers need to find ways to monetize their content, add new features, make more money, but also reduce costs. And a major way they've reduced cost has been moving to the cloud, finding ways to leverage cloud technology, and really be very aggressive with their technical approaches to the cloud and finding ways to make the cloud work for them. They've also started to hit the limits of that, I think, a little sooner than the government has because there's such vast experience with the cloud. Many of our customers have been running in virtualized environments for over 10 years. Some of them have been running on public clouds for 6 or 7 years. And they're starting to find out that while there's many advantages to being on the cloud, there's no free lunch. You still need to pay for the capability you need. And while it's nice having the ability to vary how much capability you have, you still need to plan appropriately, and you can't just throw stuff out on Amazon and, hey, it works. The other aspect we deal with more and more are our DoD customers who are looking at the limitations of the cloud in disconnected environments. So if you have a forward deployed unit that has a five-person carry case, which is a very small rack, how do you bring the cloud capabilities to that unit level? And then there's some units where they only have a laptop and it's not connected. It doesn't have the plumbing that we heard about. And having followed a Port-a-John truck here today, that can be very messy in a lot of ways. So it's a matter of bringing the data down to the unit, but it's also about bringing the intelligence from the unit back to the cloud and reintegrating it with the cloud and making it accessible for everyone so you don't have the case where a lost laptop means you lose key intelligence.
And welcome to you. So your answers to my first question about tell us about yourselves already answered a few other things we were going to have. So let me combine a couple of questions we had in mind and ask for brief answers. So we'll just go right down, starting with Brett, right down the line, come back and give Young the last word on this one. So let's look at both the government and military piece and the healthcare life sciences piece. And the question is just name one thing that you think is the causing right now for us in the industry, the biggest gap between the promise of cloud and where we are today for those two. It could be the same, but I mean, let's just answer for both briefly. You know, where's the biggest gap for government and where's the biggest gap for healthcare today? And let's see how much we agree and disagree.
So the biggest gap from my perspective is cloud's about business process change and combining that business process change with technology. And it's just the understanding of how your existing business processes map onto a new way to procure technology. That's the overarching biggest gap. All of the things in your business process can typically be addressed by a cloud platform of some type, whether it's private, public, hybrid, all these sorts of different cloud words. But it's a knowledge inside your organization on how to map the business processes you have or which ones to change to be able to successfully adopt cloud.
Okay.
It's a challenging one, actually. So I think in government, there's privacy and information, there's citizen data, and there's the need to protect that. But there's also the, you know, just from a leakage perspective, but from basically the cyber domain of war. You've got to protect it from being used in an inappropriate way by other nation states as well. So there's multiple protection scenarios there. And the healthcare scenario, and I'm more software background than other, but I'd actually like to expand that out. And so healthcare is about that the patient record for a large part of it, but it's really even broader about case management. And so there are other functions in government that need some of those same controls and those same regulatory pieces in it. And so while I'm putting information together, and I want data at rest security, I want data in motion security, I also want portions of that record to have different levels of access and different levels of usage. And so, and that happens in healthcare, but it also happens in other parts of government. I'd like to see us try to consolidate some of those requirements and get an open mechanism for that.
Good. Marlon?
Well, I think right now in the government space, I think it's addressing some of the very unique mission-specific requirements. You see a lot of different lines of business applications which apply across many industries, but for government itself, government is it's like an Uber industry of industries. It's in many different kinds of areas, whether it's building roads or maintaining bridges, or whether it's communications and overseeing the laws and regulations for communications, or capital market supervision or banking supervision. I don't think that cloud yet today addresses those mission critical capacities. However, that said, we do see a big trend of customers taking their own on-premise applications and trying to figure out ways to move those to the infrastructure as a service provider and get out of the business of managing their own data center.
Thank you. Mark?
Yeah, I think in the military and in the government area, I think the biggest gap is getting folks to understand, to separate this idea between security that the cloud either does or doesn't provide, and the things that have to be put in place to ensure security is maintained. I mean, we've heard a lot about Mr. Snowden. I'll even throw out the NSA. The fact of the matter is, it's not the technology. You can put all the security aspects around the technology, lock it down, and so on. It was managing the personal, the human element. Mm-hmm. And once I think that gap is understood, is that we can sit here all day long and talk about, well, if we did this in the cloud and ensured security here and so on. If at the human element level, policies aren't put in place, disciplines aren't put in place, you're still going to have security lapses. So I think that gap has to be closed. And I think that also extends into the healthcare area as well. You know, clearly the privacy, the security of the PHI as it goes out into the cloud, I mean, anybody and everybody could possibly get a hold of that. But I will tell you, even today, when you walk into doctor's offices, you know, when you see what happens with your records, you kind of wonder. Mm-hmm. And that comes down to not the technology that they are using, because given our example, our technology, MFPs have had hard disk drive encryption and secure printing capabilities, password protection and that for years. But unless there's a policy in place that makes sure that the employees are following that security policy, that technology doesn't mean anything. So I think that gap.
Good points.
It has to be closed.
James?
So I get, in the general government cloud space, I get most nervous about oversubscription of private clouds. I think that relatively few organizations are looking at what's our worst case scenario for cloud utilization. And having worked with a lot of customers who bought a SAN that they thought would take care of their needs for 20 years, and it turns out takes care of it for 20 days, there's just not that level of systemic planning that goes on. One of our customers is the BBC, and what they use as their standard load test is, what if during the 2012 Olympics in London the Queen had died? And that's a pretty significant load on their system, everyone hitting it at the same time. I'm not sure that most organizations are thinking, when they set up their private clouds, whether that sort of thing would hit all at once and whether it would hit all services at the same time. From a healthcare perspective, I've done a bit of work with some healthcare organizations and specifically with the government on healthcare. And there's a lot of lessons learned when it comes to security from the DoD and IC spaces that I think are getting relearned on the fly and the hard way with a lot of toes being stubbed in the healthcare space.
Okay. Young, you get the last word on this.
And just a short answer, right?
Yeah, please.
I am more on the perhaps architecture and implementation. When we talk about people, process, technology, I think, you know, panels talk a lot about the process concept. I think I focus on the technology transformation here. I see for healthcare, I see is an interop. Well, I see a lot of silo healthcare system. And the issue is really the interoperability among them. Because individually, they're probably very well designed. But it's the interoperability that really, I think, is blocking the movement. Because if you look at the healthcare business, you know, the technology is advancing, the business model is maturing, and the clinical need, you know, to form a healthcare team, perhaps in a tele kind of conference type of thing to support a patient, is much more needed now. And so I see the interop is really a key that the healthcare industry has to address. In terms of the government, I actually see it's the roadmap. Because government has deployed a lot of stuff already to transition into cloud, either private cloud or public cloud or a mixed type of environment, a hybrid environment. It's the roadmap that how we transition from today what we have to the target, to the goal that we want. I see we're missing that part of the methodology, the roadmap to transition the government to cloud computing.
Thank you, it's a good one. So we've talked about some of the substantive issues. The other side, from your perspective, from your expertise, we'd like to hear about is which of the problems we hear do you think are actually the most illusory? Let's just do government first, we'll do it for healthcare a second time around. But start with Mark this time. What do you think is really not a problem that we might think is a problem or hear is a problem that's just not true?
Well, the definition of cloud would not be a problem. I heard some definition discussion about cloud, and the reality is, you know, it's. I see more about IT consolidation, and the government is going to need to do IT consolidation. Is doing IT consolidation, whether it does it on premise, whether it does it in a group setting like some governments are doing internationally, or whether it goes completely to public cloud. One of those scenarios, we're going to move to an IT consolidation scenario. So I think the definition problem, I think that's not a problem.
Okay. Marlon?
Yeah, I think in terms of what's illusory, what's not there today, or you know, what do people think isn't there? It's real, cloud is there, it's happening, and anybody who has a Gmail or a Yahoo or an Outlook account, you're using it today. And so maybe it's a question of people not realizing that they're actually using it.
Mm-hmm. Tom?
Yeah, I would have to agree with the last two. I think you know, the definition of the cloud, everybody pretty much has their own definition. And whatever that definition is, they pretty much know what it does and what it means. But again, I think it's just a matter of we're all using the cloud now. We're all very comfortable with sharing a lot of information that we wouldn't have shared years and years ago on things like Facebook and Twitter and so on. So it's just that, you know, next transition to, okay, into the corporate level, can I take that personal comfort into a corporate type of enterprise level?
Okay. James?
I think many customers get caught up on a cloud strategy, and rather than implementing with the cloud, they spend, and this happens a lot in government, several years defining the strategy, and I think the next wave will come along before the strategy gets implemented for many of these customers. So it really goes along with the cloud's defined, it's there, let's get using it.
Yeah?
Yes, one thing I kind of in agreement with the panel is I see there's some misconception on cloud or not really seeing what's true value of cloud. And that's why many customer I've facing, I've talked to, and a lot of them said, we have cloud ready. And then I realized after we talk about it, we realized, no, you're talking about remote access. That's not cloud, right? I mean, in fact, the other day I heard it on the radio. It was discussing security, and then the host asked the subject matter experts, and you know, so what is cloud really? Oh, it's like you have a remote resource, you can access to it and you can use it. That's remote access. We have that for 40 years, right? That is not cloud. So the misconception there is the cloud is really about the instant gratification that you can get, right? It's about right now. Right. What do you need? You can get it right now. And that capability, I cannot believe any business say, I don't want it. So I always joke about it, say, to cloud or not to cloud? That is not the question. It's really how bad you want it. And I think that especially for decision maker, for the leaders, they really need to grasp that essence of it. And then take the leadership and move the whole industry forward. I see that's not there yet.
So Brett, the last word. What problem we hear about cloud do you think is the most illusory?
So I think there's a conception out there, a belief that you have to rewrite your application to move it to the cloud. And that's not true. You can rewrite your application and it can run better with dynamic infrastructure, but there's a wide variety of cloud infrastructure and platforms available, and those platforms can run existing applications as good or better than the infrastructure you're running them on today. By rewriting or changing or updating modules, you can make your application better, but you don't have to rewrite it to move it to running on a cloud platform.
Thank you. So let's, Marlon, it's not your area of healthcare, but is there anything else, just real quickly, that we think in the healthcare space may be a misnomer or misunderstood about the cloud that just really should be cleared up because it's just not the right perception?
Well, I think I'd like to add a point. We were talking about cloud. Many, many people think of cloud as only being software as a service. It's that one thing, that one way you use it. And cloud is so much more than that. And I think in healthcare, we're starting to see some of the, for example, doctors using their iPads, and they really love them, and they don't realize that they could be doing so much more with them. Right. I think that's, you know, sort of the illusion there that cloud is just one little thing.
Okay, good one. Tom?
I'm not sure if I can add any more.
It's been a lot,
I know we're going down that path as well. Looking at the cloud again, not just being, you know, storage of documents or transfer of documents and information, but a way of delivering services right to our MFPs.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Okay. James?
On healthcare, I think people get rightly hung up on security, but maybe too much hung up on security. If you come up with a process and you say it's not secure enough, you have to remember that the competing process is putting the information on a piece of paper, putting it in a little tin box outside your house, and letting it sit there for a while till the mail picks it up.
That's secure.
Yeah, it's real secure. because there's paper forms out there that have all this personal information that we worry about encrypting at rest, but they're there and they're easy to get, and we should probably get a little less concerned with security.
Okay. Young?
I would rather the physician would use Windows 8 device rather than.
Yeah, of course.
I think I just make a general statement and some of the observation I have, particularly for healthcare. I think it's very exciting because I was reading an article, and one of the physicians said that with the cloud that we can collect a lot of data, and so when they actually interact with the patient remotely, they can collect the sensor information, and sometimes, particularly for psychological treatment, they can have other devices to make a decision and help them, and other staff to help them to make a decision based upon those sensors which spins through the cloud to determine that we should either treat the patient right away, or we should admit it, or we should transfer the patient. And for me, I see this really excitement of using technology to solve the problem to improve our lives. So for healthcare, I really see this many opportunity as service provider continue to improve our technology, our process. And I think healthcare, hopefully, have an open mind and really to see through what we can provide and really leverage and to really make better.
Okay. Brett?
So looking at cloud in the healthcare market, I think it opens up all sorts of new opportunities. Healthcare today is a hyper-fragmented, localized market, and you, wherever you're at, you get access to the physicians and the nurses and the staff that are there. Cloud computing in healthcare has the opportunity to enable collaboration amongst doctors and nurses and professionals like never before. If you've got a paper medical record, it's hard to talk to a specialist somewhere else about it in a timely manner. If you've got instruments inside of an operating room that are not connected and not sharing the information and not cloud-enabled, you can't bring in another colleague or a specialist. You can't get somebody on immediately and have them looking at that device information. So this, in healthcare, the benefits of adopting cloud can radically transform patient care. And I think it's looking at that makes it something where we need to figure out how to overcome the obstacles in order to do that.
You get the last word.
So I got two. I'm going to try to make them short, though.
Okay.
So as James had mentioned before, that tactical edge scenario is very much in play, even in healthcare. So EMS, the medic on the battlefield and other, mobility is key to that. And I've got to be able to have systems that go out with that. And cloudlets, the concept of taking cloud components and having those be in the region, be out on the front line, but the device still, through service-oriented architectures, can still take advantage of that, and as communications available, they sync up. And then I noticed a couple of Department of Commerce people here, so I'm gonna plug a policy in regard to healthcare, because healthcare has the ability to be transformative for the citizen, as well as for as a patient, as well as for the doctor and the healthcare community. And the NSTIC, the National Strategy for Identities in Cyberspace, if we could take that concept and allow, for security, and allow the citizen to own their identity and know where their identity is being used in cyberspace in conjunction with their health record, I think that would be a
huge,
great
breakthrough. Thank you. That was a great point. You have been very patient with us not to have your questions answered before we got to break. So let me open it up now. Who has questions for the panel? Who? Do you have a question? I misread the audience, dying to pitch in.
I have a question. Several of you were, I think, pretty sanguine about the concern that people understood the cloud and that they kind of got it and embraced it. And because I think that was part of the response into one of the challenges that you felt was illusory. And that surprises me a little bit. And I'm wondering if there's a difference between large, sophisticated cloud consumers like the government or big companies with full-time CTOs or CIOs versus SMBs or smaller entities where my belief, just founded only on my intuition, is that it's actually not so clear that those companies, middle market companies, may be thinking, yeah, the CEO may have heard about this cloud thing, but I'm really not real sure what the heck it is. I know people are telling me it's a good thing, but I really need to understand it and be convinced before I go that way. I think there's maybe a difference between big versus SMB.
So my experience on this is actually that non-technical SMB industries are leading in cloud adoption. Because they don't have the ability to run and operate and do these things themselves. So if you look at the adoption of products like Microsoft's Office 365, Google's Apps for Business, Rackspace, we have a cloud office suite of email and collaboration as well. Our primary customers are non-technical small businesses, because the days and ideas of a file server in your office and doing all this stuff yourself is super hard, because they just... being able to access your information now, if you're a lawyer with a small law firm and you want to be able to access a client file, like you have PC Anywhere, remote access on your desktop at the office, or you want to be able to be more mobile and access across multiple devices now, and that stuff is way too complicated for SMB to do on their own. Enterprise, I think, is actually in government probably slower, because they have the ability to do some of these things, or they have existing remote access systems in place today that work better than what SMB has.
Other answers, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, so the larger ones have their own IT staff, their own budgets, and so they may go private more so than they go cloud at first. We see the smaller and medium pushing that envelope first. And I'd like to extend that, actually. So if you're a smaller and medium, the scenario of getting a service, getting a function, a utility is great, But I see centralization of expertise also playing into that. So especially in a security field, I don't have the ability to have staff that can scan, that can look for vulnerabilities and those kind of things, and to route my communication from one cloud provider to a security cloud provider who can also do some of that would be highly advantageous to that group.
Yeah. And we're actually seeing some of the same, not just in the US, but abroad, where we're finding that small businesses don't have the resources to be able to manage their own, you know, their own finance and accounting and set that all up themselves. And we even find in some regions, in China, for example, and in we're seeing interest in parts of Europe, that customers, public sector entities, want to set up a cloud platform to make it available to do for small businesses to be able to start up and have their operations ready to go on day one. And then, oh, by the way, it makes it a lot easier for them to file their tax and other statements with the government. So we're seeing the government's enabling small business development by using cloud solutions, by offering cloud solutions to the businesses in the region.
Thank you. Another question? Anywhere? In the back.
Let's hit the microphone.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm not sure that I need it.
We can hear you pretty well.
Yeah.
Okay, I will use it after all.
Well, for the recording.
Yeah, and I'm just wondering, what are the operational and cost implications of, say, either regions or continents imposing regional cloud computing, or is it going to come down to a national level? And again, what are the operational and cost implications both here in the US and in other places of that being imposed in the cloud environment?
That's a great question. Marlon?
I'm going to take that one. That's one of the biggest challenges that we as a software and a technology vendor have today. So if you have to have a data center in multiple countries, it's going to raise your cost of operations, and it's going to undermine the economies of scale that are offered to potential customers. And by definition, it will raise the costs for all of those public sector or healthcare or other customers in that particular country because you have that requirement. And we're seeing more and more of those requirements for that data sovereignty. And so I think it runs counter to this idea of distributive computing capacity and this idea that you know, it's always available. Well, yes, but think of how much capacity you're going to have in that specific country. What will that mean for the industry? Probably it's going to be either a very large technology company or, more likely, the telecom companies in those specific countries that are requiring it. And that's what I'm seeing in, like, Central and Eastern Europe today, in the former Soviet Union countries today, and in some other specific countries around the world.
Thank you. Okay, real quick.
I thought just add a little bit to that. Is a lot of this kind of consideration is really up to the planner. When you consider a cloud solution, you really need to do some analysis in terms of the where is your data ownership and where is your audience, and also which service provider you provide, and the cost when you actually get down to the implementation can be something can pops up really in a surprising way. So this is a great question, and I think one of another issue that we're missing that kind of skill set today in the field to really can do a cost analysis in terms of the whole thing from operation into actual translation to dollar.
It'll come. All right, I want to thank our panelists. Please join me in thanking them.